Note investing is very similar to banking. It is just purchasing a set number of payments at a certain interest rate, at a certain term, usually at a discount. As note investors, we enjoy the security of the property without the risk of ownership.
Hello there and welcome back to the My Future Business Show. I hope you're doing really well. It's great to have you here. My name's Rick Nusky. I'm the host of this show that gets you in front of your best audience and keeps you there. And on today's show, I have the pleasure of welcoming former Special Forces Green Beret and founder of Apex Capital and Legacy Land Fund, along with his partner, Eric Sharga, Mr. Quinn MacArthur. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you, Rick.
Great to have you here. Now, we are all going to be talking about how you can create passive income through land note investing. But we often start off with a bit of a sidestep, which I really enjoy, and we learn a little bit about the guests. So starting off with you, Quinn, where are you calling in from today?
I'm in a suburb of Jacksonville, Florida. It's called Pontevedra Beach. So I live here with my young family, and we're enjoying the coastal life and the nice warm weather here in Florida.
Fantastic. Now, Eric, I don't know if that's a virtual backdrop, but it seems to me you've got the alternate weather there. How about you? Where are you calling in from today?
That's an alternative background. I'm in the suburbs of Chicago.
Fantastic. Now, you guys move around for work, or how does it operate?
No. Well, we stay pretty well put. I don't really leave my little bubble here in the southeast of the United States.
Fantastic. Well, look, we're going to obviously be taking a deeper dive into all of the work that you guys are doing. But first, before we do that, the unique part about the My Future Business Show, Quinn, Eric, is that we take a little bit of a sidestep to learn a bit about you. Now, tell us a little bit about the things you like to do when you're not working. Is there any time to do anything, or is it all work?
Well, the good thing about, and I think we'll get into this, the good thing about our business model that it does allow us quite a bit of time to spend with our families.
Fantastic.
It's a passive investing model, as opposed to some other models that are quite active. They might seem like they're passive on the surface, but they're anything but. And so in my free time, my hobbies kind of went by the wayside, and that's okay once I started having kids. And so I spend most of my time with them at their sporting events. And like I mentioned, kind of at the beach, and like to, pretty active in our community and in our church.
Fantastic. Excellent. Now, just before I step away to Eric and get some more from you, Eric, Quinn, tell us a little bit about your background as a Green Beret.
Yeah, I graduated from West Point in 2008. And the first part of my Army career was in the infantry. I was in the 82nd Airborne Division in North Carolina. And in the second half of my career, I was in the 7th Special Forces Group, where I had the privilege of commanding an operational detachment, did several deployments. And like I say a lot, it was kind of a perfect training ground for entrepreneurship and business ownership. All the kind of the gray area and the subjectivity of everything you were doing was, it was a great experience. I had the privilege of serving some great soldiers and under some awesome commanders, and had some awesome mission sets.
I'd love to come back to that, because I've looked at your wonderful family, and I wonder a little bit about, legacy and discipline and all those types of things, and how that's sort of flowed on into your family life. But we'll come back to that in a moment. So, Eric, how about yourself?
Yeah, so in terms of my background, I was a high school English teacher for 23 years. I started in real estate about 20 years ago, doing fix and flip, buy and holds. I came across note investing in 2016 and just really fell in love with the business. During COVID, I wrote a book about note investing called Lean Lord. In terms of what I do for fun, I play some golf. I play really bad golf. I play pickleball during the summer. Oh, I hang out with my family, love to travel with my family and hang out with friends. You know, I'm looking forward to the summer. Unfortunately, I don't have the endless summer like Quinn does. It's pretty crummy here about 6 months a year, but we're right on the process.
Yeah, I like to rub that in every chance I get.
I bet you do. So it's funny, the first time I ever heard about pickleball was through Bill Gates. How did you find out about this wonderful game?
So I'm a tennis player, and I had this horrible case of tennis elbow, and I just decided that I was going to take a break. And I took a break for about 6 months, and I tried it, and I don't think I'll go back to tennis. It's horrible of me to say that, but I think I probably like it more.
I love it. Now, in terms of the daily routines, you're obviously in slightly different locations, so I'm wondering if we could break down what a day looks like for you. You're both early risers?
I am. It's a habit I can't break from the army. But yeah. No, I like to get up early and do some reading and try to keep my head down through the morning hours, do some a lot of like project-based stuff, and then leave the afternoon hours for exercise, spending time with family, and a lot of phone calls and Zoom calls.
Yeah, well, I'm not an early riser. Eric, what about you?
I definitely am not. I got up at 5 a.m. for 23 years, and when I retired from my job, I said I was never going to do it again. So I get up anywhere between 5:30 and 6:30 in the morning, and I do some work in the morning. Then I usually go to CrossFit, and then I usually start my day around 10:15.
Yep. Yep.
And then, that pretty much goes until, about 5 o'clock, but there's breaks in there. But, that's the one thing about being a business owner is that to a certain degree, you're always on.
Yes, absolutely. So Quinn, given the great amount of discipline that you must have, do you ever give yourself permission to say, nah, I'm just going to pull the covers over my head and stay in bed?
Stay in bed. Yeah. No, I don't do that. I mean, if I tried, my 6-year-old twins would probably come find me pretty quickly.
I love it. Yeah. So I'm wondering, if you wanted to, if you had a bucket list, and before we shift into the core of the call, I always love to do this part of the call. If you had a bucket list, what's on it, and where would you like to go? Do you have any travel destinations that you're still on your list?
I'd like to come see you in Australia, Rick.
Oh,
I'm a scuba diver, and I'd love to explore the waters in your neck of the woods, man.
Well, I'll tell you what, they are absolutely beautiful. I actually remember getting my dive ticket through Paddy, and when I was in Indonesia, of all places, and Paddy Dive Center, and that was a great experience. But I tell you what, come off to the coasts of South Australia. If you know anything about Rodney Fox, the great white shark got attacked just off our beach down at Aldinga Beach. And, that's a story. If you want to see the big fish, come our way.
I will.
So what have you seen in terms of your diving? Are you like a deep sea, or what do you do?
No, just pretty easy. Nothing too deep. I like to spearfish as well. And, a lot of times those are in Florida. You don't have to go too far or too deep to find some good fish. The Keys are great for that. And but I love wreck dives recreationally. Oh, yeah. So I don't know if they have those there, but up and down the coast of the Carolinas, they have some great wrecks. And even in North Florida, where I live, there's some springs, which I've only done once, but I'd like to do more of it. They have these natural springs all across kind of the panhandle of Florida, all the way across into where I am in the northeast side of Florida. And they have these beautiful blue springs in the middle of woods, in the woods where you can explore and try not to go too deep with your gear there for fear of getting lost down there. But it's pretty fun.
Not coming back up. And now, Eric, in terms of handicaps, I'm probably the most handicapped golfer in the world. Do you have a handicap? Do you play well, or are you just coring grass?
Oh, no, I'm just tearing up the grass. I'm not even good enough to have a handicap.
That's great news, because now
I don't even make the scale.
Now I don't feel so bad. Now, in terms of your individual entrepreneurial experiences into this world, when I was young, my first experience was washing cars. Tell us, Quinn, what was yours?
First entrepreneurial experience was directly out of the Army. When I was leaving the Army, I met a colonel who was retired, who was investing in mortgage notes. He was investing in these mortgage notes, and he was my first kind of introduction to, he was retired, so he had all the time in the world and wanted to spend every waking hour with his kids and his leisure goals, as he called them. And so I kind of saw what he was doing and invested alongside of him and kind of created just a basic LLC and was just doing small deals here and there when I had time. And that was my first introduction to it, was actually just real estate investing, but in some small, simple deals in Florida, actually.
How about you, Eric? Washing cars, so, what was it?
No, it wasn't really washing cars. I had a lot of jobs starting out in high school, but I really got my start in real estate when I was 29. And I was on summer vacation for my teaching job, and I got this continuing education brochure about, and one of the classes in there was being taught by this guy who was going to teach students how to basically buy and profit from foreclosures. And I thought, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. So I signed up for the class and I took the class. And the guy who taught it was just a complete nut. And he basically had us bring in, I mean, this was 20 years ago. So, you know, there was no internet. And it was basically like bring in newspaper ads of potential motivated sellers. And that was really the beginning for me. From there, I got my real estate license and I met these attorneys who were flipping homes in Chicago. And it just kind of continued from there.
You know, I find the trajectory of our lives to be intriguing. You know, you started off as a Green Beret, you've started off in your field, Eric, and then all of a sudden you've come to this intersection in your lives and you met up with each other and you decide to go about this venture. Tell us a little bit about that moment. How did that come about?
I met Eric through a mutual friend. We were actually both investing with a buddy of ours. So we didn't know each other, but we knew our friend very well. And so it was actually our mutual friend that made the connection. I was kind of telling this guy kind of what I wanted to do, he obviously knew where I was coming from, but it was kind of telling him my goals and, you know, aspirations, and sounded like Eric and he were having similar conversations. And so my buddy Dave was the matchmaker there. And we, that was our initial connection.
Because I know that in the notes that I had read in the bio that the connection has basically changed your life. Tell us a little bit about how everything's transformed for you both.
Yeah, I mean, note investing has changed my life. It's what's helped me leave my W-2 job. I used to work for a real estate developer. And this, my portfolio of the notes and cash flow that came from it, the passive cash flow, the predictable nature of everything was enough to support my family. And so we're, you know, the fund that we created together is really just doing more of the same. Something that we've put our faith into. We've put our own time and effort and our own capital into this for years now. And so the fund is really just opening the door to others to kind of realize the opportunities that are in this niche and just invest alongside of us.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, how good it must be to live life on your own terms, thanks to this, I guess it's a form of passive income. Would that be correct? Is that how it works?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah. No, it's, it's their monthly payments that come in from these notes. And it's pretty awesome. I mean, obviously didn't get to choose where I lived or what my schedule was when I was in the Army. In fact, I missed the first almost 2 years of my first son's life. And so, when we learned we were having twins, I was like, man, I'm never again will I, you know, not have the option, not have the freedom to kind of pick my own schedule. And so now I live where I want to live and, you know, create my own schedule and, you know, pick and choose partners, as time goes on and different ventures. So, no, it's great. So there's more time, more just freedom to, you know, not only do what you want to do in business, but also outside of work, you know, whether it comes to spending more time with family, investing in your community, and, you know, supporting your church and everything else.
So what about you, Eric? You would have noticed this some time ago. How's it changed your life?
You know, it's been huge. I dreamt about being a full-time investor for probably about 15 years before I actually did it. And I originally thought that I was going to achieve that dream through landlording, through buy and hold real estate investing. And I found that in business to be incredibly volatile. Mm. And at one point I just realized that it just wasn't going to happen. And I was really at a crossroads in my life. I had a family, I had a mortgage. I just was kind of falling out of love with my full-time job. And I knew I had to pivot into something else with real estate. And I listened to a podcast with a note investor and I thought, this is crazy. This is more like banking than it is real estate investing. And that was really the beginning for me. And I slowly segued out of buy and hold investing and into note investing. So it really has been a game changer for me. It is not something that will happen overnight for you, but over time, it will really produce a freedom that will allow you to run a business with a cell phone and a laptop from anywhere in the world.
See,
I know it sounds too good to be true. It's not, but it does take time to develop. It takes years to develop. It's not a get rich quick scheme.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who tells you that they can teach you that, that's just not true.
See, having the we've touched on freedom of time and place to hang out and, you know, do things with the ones that you love more often. There's a lot of benefits that come from this, but I think it's from a fundamental level important for us to talk about what it actually is. And if you could explain it to us, that would be wonderful.
Yeah. So note investing is very similar to banking. It is just purchasing a set number of payments at a certain interest rate, at a certain term, usually at a discount. And the beauty about it is that you know exactly what your set yield or the return on your investment is going to be when you purchase the loan, and there are no hidden expenses, no insurance to go up, no repairs, no replacements, no risk of fire. That is all on the owner of the property. So as note investors, we enjoy the security of the property without the risk of ownership.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, I just wonder, just for clarification, for those who don't really understand it, because I'm pretty sure that there's some complexities in this, are we talking about vacant land? Are we talking about established land? Are we talking commercial, residential? What are we talking about here?
It's vacant land exclusively. Right. Yeah. We, as Eric said, you know, we stay away from anything with improvements on it, very deliberately, very intentionally. You know, tenants are great when they pay rent, but there can be tenant issues. There can be maintenance issues. And so, yeah, what we're talking about, our underlying asset, the collateral behind all this, these notes, is vacant land, it's raw land.
Yeah. Cause that's what struck me about it. I didn't really understand it. Go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say, Rick, regarding vacant land, there's really been an increase in interest in vacant land since COVID. And it's for a variety of reasons. The first one is that people desire space right now. A lot of our end buyers are super interested in living on a 5 to 10 acre property. And since COVID, there's been a real change in remote work. And more jobs are either half remote or 100% remote, which really allows people the flexibility of being able to live where they'd like. And there's been a lot of advancements in delivery services, Starlink satellite internet, advancements in solar and battery. And that's really allowing people to kind of live not completely off the grid, but maybe further out, in which they're going to get a lot more space and they're going to have more of the beauty of nature that you don't get in suburbia. A lot of our buyers don't want to have to fight over the existing low number of houses on the market. And they decide, you know, I'm going to buy my own vacant land. I'm going to develop my own property. Additionally, a lot of people who live or have a mobile home have decided that I would much rather buy a parcel, 1 acre, 2 acre parcel with seller financing versus living in a park in which I'm going to have to pay lot rent forever.
Yes.
So it really provides people today a lot of flexibility in where they choose to live. And I personally don't see that changing anytime soon.
So would this be East to West Coast? You know, can you see this expanding in that regard?
Or is there's already a few states. I mean, all over the United States, with the exception of a few states, but yeah, pretty much everywhere. And then I would add to what Eric said is it's not always a home site. You know, we've noticed an uptick even prior to COVID, but especially, you know, COVID kind of expedited this, but recreational land, whether it's for hunting or ATV or camping, pulling your RV out there, like they don't intend to improve this land. And maybe it's 70 acres in the middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, that a hunter wants to go out there and enjoy with his family. We see a lot of that as well and growing.
It's interesting because, you know, having lived on a farm for most of my life, I think about cattle and all the other livestock that you would have. Do you ever see that sort of situation, even though they may not be developing on it, that they may, you know, have, you know, animals, let's call it, on there?
Yeah, some borrowers would have, you know, livestock out there. They usually do that for tax reasons. But no, I mean, it could be, but most of the time it's completely vacant. And our borrower a lot of times is not in the farming industry. They're either building a home site or they're enjoying it just recreationally.
Certainly learning a lot very quickly about this. I'm loving this call, gentlemen. Thank you so very much. Now tell me, what type of people are you attracting to this product?
So our fund, we have a proprietary method of working with vacant land sellers who want to offer seller financing and the flexibility of seller financing, but don't necessarily want to hold the note. So what we do is we help them offer the seller financing. We go through the entire procedure with them, and then we end up buying the note from them at closing at discount, which increases our yield from the face value of the note. And the vast majority of our borrowers are end users. So they're purchasing the land either to enjoy or to develop or for a retirement home. There's just a variety of reasons, but we really do not sell to developers. Mm-hmm. We sell essentially, or we lend to end users.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So at the end of the day, at the end of the term, I guess there is a term, is the person who's bought the product actually just a steward of the land, or do they actually end up owning it?
So they own it immediately. Right. So when they purchase it, their name is on the property, their name is on the deed, and the lender just retains a lien on the property, which gives them the right, if there's ever any default, to foreclose on the property.
I try to get so it. They, go ahead.
I was just going to say, they have the full rights of ownership, and they can do whatever they want with the land, as long as it's legal, of course.
Of course. Thank you very much for the feedback. Now, I try to be the devil's advocate in some way so that we can draw out the fundamentals so that people who don't understand this process, because it's brand new to some people who are listening to this call today. What's a first lien position? Please explain.
So the way the title works is typically first in time, first in right. And first lien just means that it's the first mortgage that's filed against the property, and it has the first right to the property in case there's ever any type of liquidation or default. They're the first in line to get paid from the sale of the property.
Got it. Is there a sliding scale of returns based on area, the size of the lot? Does it work like that, or is it just a static fixed sort of thing?
So we do see a wide variety in values, but typically we are working in the sub $150,000 value space. And that's a space that typically banks do not like to finance, just because the cost of the financing for them, it's not really worth it for them to write a loan for under $150,000. Right. And some banks don't like to write loans on vacant land anyway. So we love that space. We think that seller financing is perfect for that. And there's just a lot of demand right now for seller financing, knowing that an end buyer might not have $50,000 to purchase the land, but they do have $10,000 and they can make monthly payments.
There you go. So there's opportunities for the right people. I'm wondering, though, for those clients who do decide to work with you and they see the opportunity in it, do they need to meet any particular requirements to be a participant?
So they do need to meet a credit requirement. And the biggest one is they need to meet a down payment requirement. Typically, it's a 20% down payment.
Fantastic. Now, I also wonder about the, you talked about the $10,000 investment as opposed to $50,000. Is there a minimum and a maximum for that matter?
Personally, I like sales prices of at least $30,000 and above. And, you know, our fund typically maxes out at about $150,000 sales price because we like to spread our risk out amongst many different markets across the United States, amongst many different borrowers.
So given the nature of the product and my limited understanding of the whole process, tell me what are some of the things that people that will be watching this today should be aware of before approaching you? We've talked about price, we've talked about process. Is there anything else that, you know, that they should come to you armed with before, you know, reaching out? History, bank history, things like that. What do they need to provide you?
He's talking about from the asset management side?
From any side. When somebody, say I came to you and I was the case study and I said, look, Eric, Quinn, I'm really keen on this product. I don't know much about it. We've talked about price. We've talked about, you know, I've got to know this and I've got to have that to participate. Is there anything else that they should be aware of?
No, I mean, from the land investor side and from the borrower side, it's pretty simple.
Yeah.
I mean, we close everything through title. And so everything is just documents ready for their review. But no, I mean, I think when you ask the question, when someone approaches us, what are they looking for? I think Eric's answer about the kind of on the asset management side and the land investor side and kind of within our strategy, like those are our clients and customers. I think on the flip side of that, if I were to answer that question, since this is kind of my wheelhouse here, is the ideal client on the investor side. So we have a lot of activities within the fund, but to your audience, they would, you know, if maybe they're not interested in doing this actively, you know, as Eric said, it takes quite a while to kind of build your not only your skill set, but just build your portfolio until it, you know, to the point where it's meaningful and it moves the needle. That's what this whole fund is for. It's kind of a done for you solution. Eric and I manage these deals within our portfolio, within the fund.
Love it.
And so we're providing opportunities for others to take their capital and simply place it within the fund and let us run these strategies within the fund. So, I mean, it's, you know, when I invest, sometimes you have to understand what you're investing in, mm-hmm. and understand the strategy behind it, certainly, and do your own due diligence. But at the end of the day, it comes down to who's operating that fund and who's managing it. And do I trust them? And so the ideal client coming from, you know, from that perspective would be those that want exposure to real estate, but don't necessarily want to get their hands dirty per se. You know, they want something a little more passive. They're tired of the volatility in the stock market and they're looking for cash flow. They're looking for a second stream of income.
Yeah.
And so where do you place it? You know, the options are endless, but picking a strategy and then picking a manager who's doing that strategy is kind of a step one and two. So we think this fund is, you know, in terms of safety and predictability, there's obviously we're biased, but because that's what we've been doing for years. And that's kind of like we said, changed our lives, changed our trajectories. But that's what we recommend.
Absolutely. It's very exciting. Now at the start of the call, you talked about not being a get rich quick scheme. How long are we talking about? What's the sort of turnaround from initial investment to start seeing the rewards from the investment?
So you're going to see the rewards immediately upon your first note purchased or your first investment in a note fund. And it's just a matter in terms of your yield. And the beauty is that you're going to receive exactly what you expect for the entire lifetime of the investment. It just depends on your goals in terms of the cash flow that you're looking for, the yield that you're looking for, the amount that you have to invest, and what you need to be able to live on, or what your goals are in terms of your cash flow. So I would say that that's probably different for everyone.
Fantastic feedback. Loving this call. Now, are there any risks? You know, there's, to me, there's positive risk and negative risk. We've talked about some of the, I guess, the positive risks. Are there anything else like external forces and things like that? What's happening with politics, interest rates? What should people be aware of?
So I would say the biggest risk in note investing is the borrower stops paying. That's the biggest risk. And if that happens, you always have the right to foreclose on the property, which means that you go through the legal process of selling the collateral to recapture what you are owed on the loan. So we typically try to stay around 50%. Our maximum investment is about 50% of what the property is worth. And we feel that that conservative approach would allow us to weather pretty much anything that happens within the land markets. Even if the land prices, for some reason, if there's some major calamity that caused land prices to drop by 50%, we would still be okay. The other issue here is that Quinn and I have made very large personal investments in the fund.
Mm-hmm.
And that has created a very large difference between what the fund brings in every month and what is needed to pay investors their preferred return. And the difference between those two, it compounds over time, and it's used to buy additional loans. So we believe that the combination of those factors really makes an investment that's safe for investors. But there's never any guarantees in life.
No, of course, no. The only, what do they say? The only guarantees is death and taxes. Now, Quinn, when you first got involved, you know, put yourself back into that moment where you started talking to Eric about this wonderful opportunity. What was some of the first questions that you had about the process? Can you recall them?
About the process, I mean, it was nothing new. I mean, everything that we're doing within the fund is just everything that Eric and I had been doing, you know, independently for years and years. And so it's like, well, let's just kind of do more of the same. And the cool thing about this business model is that it truly is scalable.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't take, a bunch of satellite offices all over the country to do this, where we can invest from the comfort of our home, our little bubble here, and do our own due diligence on the assets and on the borrowers. And so really the question is, how big do we want to make this? Like, how much time do we want to spend raising capital and deploying capital into safe investments? I mean, how big do we want to get it? That's a good problem to have.
Mm. Absolutely. Sky's the limit. So I wonder, you obviously had enough knowledge, Eric, about this whole industry to go and write a guide on it called Lean Lord. Tell us a little bit about that, and what will people find inside?
So it is basically, it makes the case for why you would want to invest in mortgage notes. There is a section on vacant land, because vacant land is a little different than residential mortgage loan investing, but it compares mortgage notes to a lot of other different investments. It goes through the process of buying, where to locate them, how to do some basic due diligence. It's designed as really an introduction. I make the point that this should never be an all or nothing thing, but I think that there's a benefit to allocating a portion of your overall portfolio to a non-allocated asset class like this that is real estate based without the risk of ownership.
So you've obviously seen the results yourself. I always think about the end client that you serve. How does that make you feel when you see them getting results?
That's probably one of the best things about what we do. you know, and I don't, we haven't really hit quite on, you know, exactly what the offering is, but when people invest, they start receiving returns on month one.
Yeah.
You know, they can choose to take distributions, you know, a direct ACH back into their bank account.
Beautiful.
Or, let those returns compound within the fund, which can get really interesting over time. And so, yeah, that really is the best part of what we do is watching folks who want to come in and, you know, they trust us enough to safely deploy capital and they invest alongside us. Truly, we're partners in every deal, and then kind of watching it. I need a better phrase, but really watch that like move the needle in their lives. You know, that additional cash flow. What can they do with it? You know, kind of opens the doors, gives more opportunities, and that's really the most. It's the funnest thing about this.
Absolutely. Now, I think about due diligence, making informed decisions. I think about education. I think the podcast is a really good, I guess, gateway into learning more and connecting with your business. So what type of, I guess, ongoing educational relationship do you have with the people that you work with? Do you make yourself available to ask questions along the way? How does it work? Eric?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So our investors receive access to a portal in which we have ongoing metrics about the fund.
Yep.
We also send out a quarterly update, a quarterly newsletter that provides ongoing metrics about the fund. And so they can actually see the numbers, everything that we're doing, the number of loans, the difference between what we're taking in and what we're paying investors. So they can actually see the numbers behind the health of the fund. And additionally, they can always reach out to us if they have questions about anything related to the fund. But I would just like to stress that unlike other traditional real estate investments, this is a pretty boring model. It simply consists of taking in monthly payments, just like a bank would. And, you know, we typically, the fund averages about 20% yield and we pay investors 10%. And the difference over time is simply used to create new loans or purchase additional loans. And it really creates this snowball effect over time of creating a healthier and healthier fund that can pretty much withstand anything that happens outside in the markets.
I tell you what, it could be as boring as watching the grass grow if it works. That's all I think. Isn't that really matters here? Now, tell me a little bit about, I guess there's a relationship between this organization and Apex Capital. Tell us what's the relationship there?
Oh, that's so, I mean, so I invest exclusively in real estate. And right. And so, but obviously you need to diversify. And so this, what we've been talking about in the note investing space is purely income based.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, we're not going to 5X capital, you know, quickly. It's not a get rich quick. It's very stable, mm-hmm. It's very predictable, but the risk and return profile is fairly low. Apex Capital's, I come from a commercial real estate development background. So I do more of the same within Apex Capital and investing with partners to develop out parcels. I'm into, you know, mobile home investing, self-storage parks, RV parks, and so on. But the fund is really the focus for the next, for the foreseeable future. It's such an opportunity for investors to get in who maybe they've tried their hand at real estate. And like Eric, you know, they're kind of like, oh man, it's really not what it's cracked up to be. And maybe they did well, but they just kind of got tired of it. It's kind of a drain on their time.
Mm-hmm.
So the fund is really the focus. It's been, you know, we just kicked off not long ago, but it's picking up steam very quickly.
I love it. You know, if you can make my life easy, you can bring some income my way. I'll be all the doors open, bring it on. Now, tell me, in terms of the onboarding process, what's that going to look like?
Yeah, I mean, we ask our folks to do a call with us. We want to really make sure that we have all their answers and concerns answered.
Yep.
And just really go in the weeds, like what questions you have. We really want to develop a relationship with that investor because we hope that it's long term. You know, this is something that it's for the first year, their capital will be committed to the fund. After that, they can redeem up to 100% of that capital, of course. But it's a long-term investment. And we take it very seriously. So the first step is to have a call. And then when people are comfortable, when folks are comfortable, they'll review some documents that we have that kind of explain more about the business model, explain more about why we do what we do. And then from there, it's fairly simple. We sign up, you sign up on a partnership agreement, a private placement memorandum and an operating agreement.
Yep.
And we wire the funds and month one, they start receiving their distributions. And the cool thing is because it's monthly, folks are, they want to, over time, we hope, and it's our goal to have them invest even more into the fund as they see kind of the progress and as they get more and more comfortable.
The bigger the pool, the bigger the returns. That's fair. It seems to work for me. Now, in terms of the website, where are people going to go to find you?
It's www.legacylandfund.com.
Fantastic. So if you're on today's call and you've heard what we've been speaking about and you want to learn more, make sure to visit that domain. I'll be making sure that's available to you no matter where you see this call. This is just the gateway to finding more information. Go to that website and learn as much as you can. Do your due diligence and reach out to both Quinn and Eric. And guys, Quinn, Eric, thank you so very much for joining me on the My Future Business Show today.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Rick.